Hi there, I'm K-Town, and on this edition of Mysterious Radio.
I'm just about here, 79, a couple days, and I was born in Texas, raised in Texas, and then got into computer programming. I was a cadet at the Air Force Academy and at the Air Force Academy Prep School in Colorado Springs. With my computer training, I was asked to help at a large company in Dallas, had 3,000 employees to manage their systems analysis. And while I was there, I was approached by a gentleman that worked for Dr. Edward Teller, the father of the hydrogen bomb, and they invited me to join their project down in Australia, which was developing new technologies based on anti-gravity and advanced technology. They'd seen what I was applying a patent for and decided to invite me to join a program, which I did do, and then left in the late 70s. Since then, have had various businesses. I stayed in Australia for 30 years. I had a family down there. That wife has passed with cancer years ago. And I have 5 children, 15 grandchildren. Let's see, what else would be of interest? I've written a few books, Vindicator Scrolls, The Cosmic Conspiracy. My wife has written Dare to Prepare and Prudent Places, which is a DVD or like a CD-ROM type thing, a map of places in the United States that are wiser than others to live in this time. And she wrote Prophetic Perils, End Time Prophecies, which are very, very pertinent right now with what she talked about would happen in the Middle East, which is now happening. And
really?
Yeah, I have a website, standeo.com, and down at the very bottom of it, there's a link to Stan's bio. If you click on that, you get a detailed analysis of what I was just kind of poorly explaining to you. I've been to the Middle East, I've been to Africa, Australia, New Zealand, all over the place doing research, and I'm now here in Colorado at Pueblo West near the Rockies. I can see for probably 50 miles either way here from my back deck.
Well, that sounds nice. That sounds really, really nice. I want to know where we can get the CD-ROM. You said it's a CD-ROM that tells you like the best places to live right now. Is that on your website as well?
It is. Let me just go to my website. It's probably a clever thing. And let's see, Prudent Places. Yeah. If you go to standeo.com, you'll come up with, some stuff, postings that we made about my shows. But just scroll down just a little bit. You'll see a row of pictures. And those are links to various books and things that we produced. And the third one is called Prudent Places USA. When you click on it, it will take you to our shopping cart, which gives you a word description of it. And I think that's all you need. And then you can just put in your cart and we'll send it out to you. I'm just looking to see if I've got any other photos up there. Okay, now this is definitely made for computer. I have to tell you that. But our other books are there, too. I mean, the Dare to Prepare works in conjunction with the Prudent Places. It's a 632-page book on how to prepare for emergencies of all kinds. There's 69 chapters, as I recall, that how they put in there. And my Cosmic Conspiracy book, it's the first book I wrote, and I wrote it after I escaped various intelligence agencies that were trying to capture me after I left the Teller program. Of the secrets I held about our technology. That's an interesting read. And you can scan through the photos there on that page and see other things. Just click and look. And I have things to teach you things about the world and physics. Just kind of a crazy old guy talking about everything that interests him. You can see it there on our website.
All right. Very good. And so the Pertinent Places, that's based on prophecies or things that...
No, that's based on the government information that we got at the time. The most recent was a few years back, but we got all the maps, all the warnings, And she put them in this CD-ROM because they were large maps and they were in color. So to print those in a book would just be prohibitive. I mean, you'd be paying $100 for the book at least. So doing it this way, you're looking at, I don't know, $29 or something for a CD, and you can print your own copies of whatever you want in there. So, yeah, it's she collected a lot of stuff along the way and then got to the government departments and said, look, hey, you know, can you update this? And let's see, I think it's in the Dare to Prepare book also. She got a thing from the Nuclear Preparation Department, what it was at the time in the 50s, about how to build a nuclear a bunker, you know, for a nuclear attack in your home using available, you know, things. And it was put out by FEMA. That you can't get them anymore, but we did manage to land that one copy and then reprint it by permission in the book. So these are very pertinent things right now, and we've had them out there for you for two decades or so, some of it. And you know, it's time now. The prudent places is where do you live? Okay, I live in the United States in Texas. Okay, here are the political differentiations by county, you know, by population. You want to live in Dallas? Well, here's what you're going to face as far as neighbors and political opinions and economic income. House, yeah, it's really detailed, and people need that right now because I know a lot of people are saying I'm out of here for whatever reason. They want to move to a different place, and she did such an excellent job on that. I mean, people don't think about the system ever collapsing. You know, the you have in the United States, but when you have rail failure, aircraft failure, food supplies limited, you know, people are dying of diseases. People then start to say, whoa, where do I go for help? You know, where do I find like-minded people? And this kind of thing does. It's not prophecy in the prudent places. It does discuss prophecy in the Prophetic Perils book. But this is a practical guide to, you know, if you're going to move, these are the things you got to consider. Do you need a hospital? Are you elderly? You know, or will you need a hospital? You know, prices of homes, and those are changing like the wind blows at the moment, but still, it's a guide. And, you know, it kind of warns you about the coasts, east and west, and the Gulf Coast, about the problems you're going to face there now and in the future from weather. So, yeah, it's just a practical guide.
Very, very useful. And, okay. So I will definitely have that linked up. I'm actually going to get one myself. So,
okay. Well, I'll, if I see your name on it there, I'll say howdy and, you know, whatever.
Well, thank you. I wanted to ask you, Stan, I recently saw, I don't know if you keep up with current events, I imagine you probably do, but
yeah.
The ruckus going on.
Every day.
Okay, good, good. And so the things that are coming out of Miami, I don't know, it's a lot of things. It's been talked about on the local news down there too, but I saw a video of a guy who was, he really, to me, genuinely looked like he was having cognitive dissonance, and he was saying, aliens are real. Do you believe, first of all, that something happened in Miami?
I can't tell. You know, I wasn't there. And these days, you can't trust a lot of things you get, even in video or news reports, because they can be faked by artificial intelligence. I have seen a number of reports about that, about a mall there where they saw, some people saw tall alien humanoid type figures. And other than that, you know, I can't verify that one way or the other. However, if you ask me, are aliens extraterrestrials here on Earth? Yes, they are. In our Teller project down in Australia, seniors were actually dealing and negotiating with them over technology transfers and over building underground and underwater, undersea bases for them to manufacture their own technology. And they have been here since probably before the time of the Garden of Eden.
What do they look like?
Well, there are several kinds. There are ones reported, you know, over the years that being short, gray critters with big eyes and, you know, bald, and then tall, gray critters, similar, you know, facial features. And then humanoids that look like us, handsome, Nordic-like features. And I was told about both kinds in the project. And they said if you ever meet one of the Nordics, which down in Australia was not very likely, but if you do, you see in the sunlight, you'll see on their back of their hand, if they move it, it'll look like an oil slick with rainbows on it because of the slight gill structure of their skin cells. There's like a fish scale, and it will diffract the light and be like rainbow. That could be, you know, from genetic DNA, like from lizards, you know, that reptilian type things. I never saw one. Well, no, I don't think I did. I met with a couple of United Nations, and they contacted me, and we talked about global situations. And I have to admit, we met in a private room, and I felt like a canary in a cage with the door open and a cat sitting out there. They gave me a creepy feeling, but they looked normal. It's just the way they acted. Other than that, I don't think I've ever seen any. Just seen reports that we were shown in the project, and after that,
were they tall, Stan? Were they tall, or did they?
Well, now the Nordic ones were slightly taller on the average, around 6.5-7 feet, maybe a little bit taller. I guess if you picked one, it was really, you know, had high DNA or something. But they are being presented to us as the rational group of aliens. But let me break this down. I'm a student of the Bible. I've had an out-of-body experience. I've been out there, was taught a lot out of my body, and came back. And these, the majority of these alien or extraterrestrial contact reports for thousands of years here have been from beings in a parallel universe to us, like the Bible calls heaven. But they came down here. They mixed with our population. They bred children through our women. I don't know whether they artificially inseminated or whatever, but they did make giants. We have proof of that over in the Middle East in the records of the Old Testament, where they said that David killed Goliath, and he had two giant brothers, and they were from a DNA line out of the land of Bashan, where Og was the king of it, and he was a giant, and his bed was like 18 feet long, I mean, or tall, or whatever you put it. But that all has been covered up in Syria, you know, with magma flows from volcanic activity over the years. So the giants did appear here out of the normal DNA progress that archaeologists would like to make a, you know, tiny picture of the Earth's history in. So the Nordic craters, the gray craters, some of the ones that look like insects, some that are like erect, two legs, two arms, reptilian, like lizard skin. These things have been reported. And speaking in the biblical terms, these are beings that left their first estate, left the universe that our bubble, our virtual reality lives in. They came here to Earth against orders from the commander, the king of the heavens, and they started to do things that they were not supposed to do to our primitive cultures. They crossbred us and made, instead of Homo erectus, they made, you know, modified Homo erectus by changing what God himself, the creator, made in the Garden of Eden in Tanzania. He changed the DNA pattern of Homo erectus and made it have a communication system that would communicate through the portal or the wall between our world and the heavens. And so that made what we call Adamic man, you know, clean DNA and everything. They were kicked out of the Garden of Eden after they, you know, ate of the forbidden fruit and that kind of stuff. And then they migrated down through the Danakil Plains into Saudi Arabia and Yemen. And there is where they met these fallen ones, at least one of their 12 civilization points on the planet. There were some in China, some in South America, you know, in Asia, this sort of thing. But they met the ones that we know about there in Saudi Arabia, and the crossbreeding did produce giants. And you'll remember the flood was sent to wipe out all of the hybrid beings that didn't belong here, that were crossbreeds between, you know, Homo erectus or Adamic man and these fallen ones, you know, which they were tall. Very tall in some cases, and this is forbidden. It was also forbidden to teach us technology and science and stuff, and yet that happened. So these beings have been here a long time. They are having a war in the heavens, and, you know, group by group, they were cast down here to Earth through the portals and were forbidden to come back up into the heavens because of the war between the Creator and, you know, the Bible calls him Satan. And that battle, you know, there was technology involved in the battle on the way up there, but when they came down here, the Earth was primitive, so they had to develop mankind to make technology, to make, you know, rockets, missiles, bombs, weapons, and it took generations to do that. But once they had taken us to that level, then they could outfit these underground bases. They could bring their troops from all over the world or the outer space, wherever they'd stored them, and get in here and get ready for one final battle with the Creator, which is the Battle of Armageddon, the Bible calls. Now, whether you believe all that stuff or not, I do, of course, but I had a peek out of my body, so I know these things are true. Whether you believe it or not, what is about to happen is a humongous deception of the entire human race. Now, if you see the alien presence disclosed in a mall in Florida, or somebody saw them, you know, flying over the ranch, or they land and abducted them, know that this is part of the deception that is being fully disclosed very shortly. It's going to show the people of Earth, hey, we mean you no harm. We come in peace. We're going to get rid of your Illuminati banking controllers that have ruined your life for generations here. And we're going to bring you technology that will get rid of cancer and sickness. And we'll make a peaceful one world. We'll appoint one of your people to lead the world, and we'll give you technology. And, you know, you won't have the threat of nuclear war because we can disarm all of them. And, you know, life will be wonderful. Now, this is a deception spoken of in the New Testament as well, that Jesus spoke of. Don't be deceived, he says, because it's going to be very clever, so clever it would fool any of you that know what's coming, unless you weren't there. And that, I think, was a reference to the rapture, where Christian believers of this age are going to be lifted off before that man of sin, the world dictator, is revealed. But this is going to be very clever, and you can see it now. I'm seeing it on the dish and you know, our TV programs and videos and stuff. We're getting it news. More and more, we're hearing about the aliens, the tic-tac, UFO, oh, it does magic tricks, so it's impossible to be duplicated by, you know, Earth technology. Well, of course, we've done all that stuff. I was there at the project, but one of these days I'll have to make a video, if we have time left, to tell you how all these parts work and explain the mystery of these UFOs and anti-gravity. But anyway, this deception is going to be welcomed by the people of Earth for one reason: fear. And President Ronald Reagan addressed this, the United Nations, years ago. He said he often wondered what would happen to the fighting nations of this planet if we were visited by little green men and they were frightened, and then our nations would gather together as one and overlook their differences to fight a common enemy. And, you know, in this case, the enemy is going to appear to be a common savior of mankind and stop nuclear war. So when does that become urgent to the people of Earth? It's very close, because the Middle East conflict over Israel and the surrounding nations is going to come to a head very shortly. Well, several heads, first of about three. The Gaza thing was planned for some time to force a demand for a two-state solution that Israel would accept temporarily anyway. I've put on my, I have a site on my website at standale.com. And up the top, there's a blue image, or blue text that says show images. And if you go to that, it will go to a page that updates frequently with news items. And it has little boxes you can click on to give you pictures or videos or links to the article. And there's one in particular about Jared Kushner dealing with Israel, Palestine, Hamas, Gaza, Iran, and the Middle East. And it's about an hour and a half interview with a host there, I think Lex Friedman is his name. And he tells you, and this is only about 2 months ago, he tells you how they're going to solve the Middle East problems between the Arab nations and between the Arab nations and Israel. Now, when he says we, he's talking about himself and Mohammed bin Salman, Prince of Saudi Arabia. Between the two of them, they're like, you know, a bromance of the princes of power. And he's already laid out a business plan, and he's had several business plans already implemented to the Arab nations that joined the Abraham Accord. And what he does is he approaches solving a country's problem as a business plan, outlining the problems, outlining the possible solutions, setting a way to do it, and setting milestone markers for them to accomplish, for the world government to then, or the nations of the world to then say, okay, you know, you're legitimate, we recognize you. Gaza is going to be rebuilt. They're going to spend at least $1 billion to start with to rebuild Gaza. They're going to have a civilian government, elected government there, and they're going to have appointed watchers living there, monitors to be sure that the Gazans don't let a terrorist organization take over again. And they're going to have, you know, two-state solution between West Bank and Gaza and Israel, that although Israel will grumble about, they will accept. And this is going to come to pass this year sometime. They're going to, you just watch for the signs as they start stopping the fighting and making arrangements for a new government of Gaza. During the process of getting to that point, we may see that a nuclear device is detonated in the Middle East because Iran has access to the weapons of mass destruction they need now. And Israel knows it, and Iran has their bases, 10 of them, for missile storage around the city of Damascus in Syria. And it's so close to northern Israel that they could lob in a nuclear missile or several of them, some decoys or whatever, that would overload the Iron Dome thing. The Israelis couldn't bring it down, and they would be hit with a nuclear strike. And the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, have already gone over and bombed a number of places where they thought these were being stored. But I'm sure they didn't get a bomb there, sure, too. So what's going to happen then is somebody, Israel, the United States, the Mediterranean fleet, somebody is going to drop a nuke on Damascus, because that will disable about 10 storage areas for where Iran has dumped its missiles. And if that happens, if a nuke goes off in the Middle East like that, the world is going to panic, thinking, that's it. The Arab nations, the Iranians, everybody else that hates America, going to come after America and will be invaded. Other countries in Europe will think, well, the Iranians are going to rush through, Russia is going to come in, will be wiped out. It will be fear amongst all the nations. And they will kind of uniformly cry, well, no one stops this war. Can we have peace? And that's the time when the deceptive UFO alien race, I put that in quotes, will come forward and say, oh, look, we mean you no harm. We'll get rid of any bad aliens that are here. We'll get rid of your own bad governments, the Illuminati, whatever, and we'll help you bring peace to your world like our world has. And it'll be a great lie, great deception. And that's why myself and others who've been involved in it have for many years now been warning people, look for these things and don't be deceived. And artificial intelligence, we knew about, I talked about it in 1978. We are controlled by at least 3 supercomputers, and I mean super quantum computers, with artificial intelligence. And, that will be used by the New World Order when it comes to power. And we won't be able to defeat it by ourselves. It's just too terribly intelligent. And it's artificial, but it is intelligent.
Is it, let me ask you this. You said so much, but let me ask you something about the quantum computers. I saw the YouTube video where the guy was speaking to a crowd of look like very intelligent people. That their quantum computers can actually go back into different dimensions and do all kinds of things like that. Can they do that?
Well, maybe. Here's the thing. When you talk different dimensions, we have Earth, our universe, that's a bubble, a virtual reality within another universe or reality, which is where the heavens are mentioned in the Sumerian and Christian and Judaic texts. So, can the artificial intelligence breach that and go into the parallel dimension? At this time, I think it's prohibited. But can it do things in lower dimensional levels, which we have Tahom depths within the Earth for sure that are like hell, if you wish. And these are spoken of, and we've seen reports from people that say they've seen people come up out of caves in Sydney, in New South Wales. We have reports from the Aboriginal children playing ball with a black hairy man that comes up out of a tunnel there. We've had Bigfoot. We've had things in the Alps, the snowman, abdominal snowman, that kind of stuff.
Well, what is Bigfoot anyway? What is Bigfoot?
Well, I think there's something there. I don't know whether they are gating from a virtual reality beneath ours that we encapsulate and then come up periodically, or whether they live under in the mantle, the crust of the Earth, and do periodically come out for what they need from here. They don't seem to leave footprints or scat or various other things, but they leave a bad smell, which is very commonly reported for people getting close to them. They are intelligent and probably more so than we are from reports I've gotten. So what are they doing here? Staying out of trouble, I guess. And will they be revealed? Well, that depends on chance, time, and circumstance. And at the moment, the way the world is fragmenting, everybody at everybody's throat, organizations failing, governments failing, it's going to be hard to get reliable reports. And now with AI being so obviously used, we could see videos, we could see reports of people saying this and that about, you know, the snowman or the Yeti or whatever, and it may be absolute fabrication. There's just no way to tell. I mean, there's no evidence that we can trust anymore in videos or audio or whatever.
Right. Everything can be manipulated. Yeah.
Oh, so much. Look, I know how it works. And the artificial intelligence, here's the big problem with it. Whether it's the Chinese one, or the Swiss one, or the United States one, there are three or four of them floating around at the moment. They are programmed not by one programmer, by several. And they have to put decision blocks in it when certain conditions arrive. And the AI says, well, is this ethical? Or is this logical or not? And when you have several programmers, which one's ethical pattern does the AI choose? Or does it merge and make an unpredictable one? You see what I'm saying? It's an artificial intelligences in a group, and their decisions can be colored by, you know, their programmers. And long after the programmers are gone, those decision blocks are there. So I've argued against this for a long time until you've got a programmer, a trustworthy programmer, and I call the creator a trustworthy programmer. Until you've got that, you can't trust this AI. You're turning your life over to a very fast idiot and untrustworthy. Anyway, I get on my soapbox.
No, yeah.
I'm sorry.
You're totally fine. Totally fine. I love it. Let me ask you about the Giants. There was a report, and I did an interview with, what was his name? I forget his name. It'll come to me.
Steve Quayle.
Not Steve Quayle, but the other guys, one of his buddies that he talks to all the time. He's got some initials. I can't think of it.
L.A. Marzulli?
That's it. L.A. Yeah. L.A. Yeah. had a video on, he had a video on YouTube that showed where he was talking to some military people, military guys, and said that they actually confronted and fought and killed one of those giants.
Over in Afghanistan. Yeah,
yes.
I heard about that.
Are they still roaming around the planet?
Well, they could be. I mean, there are reports like that again. That's such an old report, it might be reliable. The giants in biblical times were nasty critters. They were primitive. Are these modern ones almost as primitive, or do they have access to advanced technology supplied to them by Satan? You know, we have Satan in this world. There's no question about it. And according to the Bible, we lost the title deed to the entire planet, and it went to him when Adam ate of the forbidden fruit and was cast out of the garden. You know, like a lot of people that are rational, I probably looked at the Bible stories in the beginning in my young days and said, oh, yeah, that's just a lot of fable and, you know, makeup and stuff. You know, it's not real fairy tales. And as time passed, I thought, I wonder if it is true. I wonder if it was a Garden of Eden, you know, or giants in like Atlantis and that kind of stuff. And so I set out to prove these things in my later years here, to prove the authenticity. It's a biblical historical document of the Bible and several associated books, like the Book of Enoch and, you know, the Jasher. There's several other books. And to my surprise, I think it was in 2016, I was able to use the old Hebrew of Genesis and some of the other books as well, and find the physical locations of the Garden of Eden and go visit it and film there. It requires, you know, a kind of a Copernican revolution of your thinking, because I had to shrink the planet down 25% because it did undergo an expansion here, a long time ago, probably 6 to 12,000 years ago, the Earth expanded. And that was because of an asteroid that hit in the Indian Ocean, which caused the crust to start moving like your foam on your latte, you know, like a breeze blew it. And as it expanded, it broke the landmass, you know, Pangaea, where all the continents were together. It broke the landmass at places where large, fast flowing rivers had eroded the crust of the Earth. Now, putting it all back together and putting the continents back together before they were pushed apart, I found that I could track the location of the Garden of Eden to a volcanic crater a collapsed volcano crater in Tanzania called the Ngoro Ngoro Plateau. And there's a 100-mile diameter, ringed in by 2,000-foot walls, garden. It's still functioning today. It's probably not as pretty as it was originally. And there are 20,000 animals or so there, you know, at least. And I visited, filmed it, looked for the location of the two trees, and I found the raised ground area, like a little flat-top table in the middle of that 100 square miles that could be seen from anywhere in that 100 square miles from the ground. And there were two locations with a stream that had come up originally to water it, and there were no trees there. But the Tanzanian government told me, well, we're trying to figure out how that ground is so fertile. It's very fertile there on top of that mound, you know, where the two trees allegedly grew. So finding Eden, and finding, you know, that the locals, the Maasai and the Dakota tribes, when I talked to their elders, said God came down from the sky right here into this Ngoro crater, and he created man from the dust there and his woman. And man was kicked out because he irritated the creator. But they say that's where the Garden of Eden is. And for like 1,500 to 2,000 years, the Dakota tribe had their festive ceremonies annually there to celebrate that. And their graves are there now. I mean, I went to the graves and visited for many chiefs that were there over that period of time. So they tell you that. That's the Garden of Eden. And then when you come up in the air above that Ngoro crater, I shot pictures of it, you see where at the top of it, there was a huge, huge spring, if you want to call it, that was so big that it was 20 acres in diameter, and it threw up hot water from Lake Victoria to the left that was heated by some of the 49 volcanoes in the area, and it blew it up, filled up that area with water, and it overflowed down the north end of the Ngoro crater and became a huge three rivers there and one off to the right toward Madagascar now, the four rivers of Eden, just as like the Bible said. So I found it, and that was Eden. And then I thought, right, okay, what caused the flood? And I tracked that mystery down. I found that the asteroid could have popped 15 miles in diameter, hit on the east coast of India before it was, stretched up into China where it is now. I mean, the Himalayas have seashells and sea bottom on them, several thousands of feet above sea level. It's because the tip of India, where Ceylon is, used to be much further down into the middle of the Indian Ocean where this asteroid struck. And when the asteroid struck, it was so powerful and at such a shallow angle that it caused India to be shoved, on the surface of the earth there, shoved up into China to form the Himalayas and the structure of China as we know it today. And so finding that asteroid then allowed me to figure out back from that where the shockwaves would have gone and the waves and how it would have broken up the fountains of the deep, the water and the boho discontinuity, as the Bible spoke about. And I located Atlantis from the Greek legends that Plato recorded. And I was able to find all the identifying landmarks that Plato spoke about. And Atlantis was where one of the 12 places where fallen ones from the heavens came down and, you know, interacted with man and bred with them. I found the castle island for where Poseidon had his wife, Cleito, and their sets of twins. Might have been five sets, something like that. Anyway, maybe three. And I found the hot water, cold water source coming up from underneath the Persian Gulf to water that island. It's there. I've discussed it many times and shown the proofs of it geologically. And that's why, that civilization is there. There's like 1,400 or 1,500 artifacts that are still visible today in black rock formations all through Saudi Arabia. And even one thing under the sand, northeastern Saudi Arabia, in the sand there, I found a triangular structure that was raised up and looked like it had been a hot thing, but not really a volcano. And when I started doing a plot of that with Google Earth, showing, making lines, contour lines of the equal height, it outlined what looked like a triangular craft. And in the middle of it was a nuclear or some sort of a power thing that exploded overloaded, whatever, and created this hot pattern and made a circular burn mark right in the middle of it. And it looks all over like a triangular craft that crashed there. It's been covered by sands of time, but yet the heat evidence from its power plant does show. And with these rulership there of the Atlanteans under Poseidon, which were, again, fallen ones, there were other places like that in Japan, China, even in Europe, and North America, South America, these beings dropped down and civilized their surrounding peoples that they landed amongst and became gods to them. But the one that we remember from history is Atlantis. And Atlantis had giants, crossbreeds. There's no question about it. And if you look at it, where Joshua was told when he took the tribe of Israel or the tribes of Israel into the promised land, God told him, go to this village and that village, and he'd name them, and he'd say, and kill every living thing, every animal, every person, every baby, every living thing, kill it because they're contaminated with this cross DNA. The cross DNA that had escaped the great flood, which killed most of the people on the planet, but there were some that escaped. And that's why Joshua was given the detail to clean up the mess by killing all these crossbreeds. Well, that's Israel. And then there's the Jordan River, and there's a city still today on the east side of the Jordan River. I think it's in Jordan, maybe, but it's a city that derived its name from Gadara. And this came from one of the sons of Poseidon in the legends that Plato found. So even today, the name of some of these rulers of Atlantis still survives there. I lowered the water, or I raised the water level of the planet using Google Earth and some bathymetry that I got from a well-known crowd over in California. Anyway, they make maps. And they sent me this new bathymetry data, and I was able to image that whole area of the Middle East around Saudi Arabia and raise the sea levels so that I could see where water flowed before the planet expanded. And I could see where these water levels came from the Mediterranean down into the Euphrates. And there was a pathway then through two big mountain ranges, which were called in the Greek the Pillars of Hercules. And you would go between them and follow this waterway. And I built all this up in my lecture on Atlantis. It's a video that you can find on the YouTube and various places. And you could then come in by boat from the Mediterranean, according to the Greek legends, and go down and see Poseidon's island, which was ringed by three concentric rings of stones plated in metal, various kinds, or calcum, gold, copper, whatever. And I was able to prove that you could reach it there. Now, everybody else looking for Atlantis, has been saying, well, the pillars of Hercules, the gateway to Atlantis, is at Gibraltar, which is west of Greece, as you look at it. But what they don't factor in is two times in recorded history, the crust of the Earth has been 150 degrees to 180 degrees off, been almost upside down. And at that point, our today's west becomes east in those times when the crust was, moved. And so east, is the west that they were talking of, really. So we go east of Greece today, and that's how we find Turkey. At the Saudi Peninsula, where the gateway, where the two mountains were, ranges, were the true Pillars of Hercules and how you got into it. Anyway, as I say, I go down rabbit holes, and I apologize, but so many things to discuss.
That's okay. No, I wanted to ask you, Stan, you said you've proved that. I guess you did some type of presentations and things like that. Can we see that stuff or?
Yeah. Let's see if I've got any links on my show images page. Overview map there, Atlantis. Let me see if that goes to it. Well, first thing is some of the proofs I show in images on my show images page. And if you look at slide 20, it has a picture of Atlantis, which is Saudi Arabia, with the water flowing around it, and you can click down into that, either the text or the picture, and see a lot of details there. I'm just trying to see now if you can link to, sometimes I have a link to the video as well. This lecture, when I found Atlantis, was in 2014, it says there. Sorry, just let me mutter to myself
fine.
Here.
No, you're fine.
There's a lot of interesting stuff on that page. But then if you go to, as I will do just now, go to YouTube and search for Standeyo Atlantis. I really enjoyed that particular research. It was tremendous.
Did you? I bet.
Well, I was going to, the History Channel was going to make a documentary on it. And we were assigned a film crew and all that kind of stuff. And then they sent me the legal documents. And in the fine print, it said, oh, by the way, once we take your images and video and stuff, you can no longer talk about Atlantis New Discovery unless you do it through us, unless we allow you to, and you can no longer represent, you know, various things like that, which meant that they could virtually put the lid on what I had to say, and I was gagged. So, you know, that's why you don't see it very often here. Okay, go to Standeo 1. That's the home page for me there. And I'm looking at that. Let's see, the videos. I'm going to all my videos there. The Garden of Eden, the video on that, the discussions on that. That was quite an interesting trip there, Garden of Eden. And I'm looking here, Cosmic Conspiracy, Victory. Okay, Atlantis. Okay, down at the bottom of my videos on my page here, it says Atlantis discovered, finally, high resolution copy, a million views. And if you click on that, then it will take you through my lecture on all the findings about Atlantis I had at the time. I've got more now, but just YouTube and Standeo, you know, I suppose if we put, just Standeo, S-T-N space D-E-Y-O, okay. It'll take you to, or you can go to my homepage and see all my lectures, but in particular, those on Atlantis. But believe me, if you look at the lectures I've got up there, you know, the videos, it will keep you busy for several weeks.
Good. Okay, that's great. Okay, because I'm going to link to all this stuff. Maybe create a little file for them to have all your links, your books, and everything so that
they can have it
in one place. It's no problem at all.
At this late date, I'm just trying to help people understand the world we live in and the truth about things, as far as I know. And this is not trying to get in their pocket for any money. This is, I mean, we're sharing these things, you know.
Right, right. Let me ask you this. You talk about the Bible quite a bit. I wanted to know, like, do you think, I mean, can we leave Earth's orbit, or do we live in a plane of existence that's more described in the Bible? It's like a dome or whatever, and we're in a closed environment.
We are in a closed environment, a virtual reality. Some of the writers of antiquity around the time of Jesus, before and after, have discussed how the Earth and the universe as we know it are not real. They are not reality. They're an illusion. Even Plato discussed this, and other Greek philosophers, about we are projections, shadows upon a wall in a cave, and the light and the reality is around us, but not part of us. And so it's like a bubble, like you were saying, inside of a real universe, which may be inside of another one, I don't know. But we can only talk about what we've got references to in writing and in carved stela in the Sumerian Valley and that kind of stuff. But yes, there are things that in the Middle East, like the ziggurats, you know, these kind of four-sided pyramids that were made in Samaria and surrounding areas eventually. But these ziggurats had layers to them, three main layers, but with intermediate steps, you know, that you could walk down through a walkway from the top to the bottom. And I got a hold of Marduk stela, all that was left. You know, the Germans captured that stela during the World War II, and they burned it and whatever. And so the surviving side and most of it that I was able to look at, so the Marduk stela, S-T-E-L-E, I found that at the top of those ziggurats was a special room made for the gods to appear. And they put food out there for them to eat and drink. When they came through, they would stay up in the top level for a few hours so that the glow around them would start to recede, because where they came from, the parallel universe, was so energetic that, you know, their body would burn or shock people to death if they touched them. So they had three layers, three places to stop, eat, rest, and come down before they could touch the humans at the bottom of the ziggurat. And you could see the floor plans, even if the architect put that in there, of how the top layer was laid out from the top to receive the gods through this portal. And we see references to portals in, Western Indian civilizations, and the rock carvings here in the United States and India. Boy, in India, that's another whole story, India. And, another time we'll discuss that. There's an island there that sunk, and it was part of the giant settlements in Saudi Arabia. There were also some in Iran, which touched the southwestern port of India at the time before it was, you know, moved up into China. But anyway, there's just so much that tells us that we are in a virtual reality. And this is why
they can't leave Earth's orbit. I mean, we can't go to the moon or.
Oh yeah, yeah. You can leave Earth's orbit. You can go out. Oh yeah, you can travel around in this virtual reality. I mean, it's big. It's pretty big, and it's a lot smaller though than the astrophysicists have tried to tell us. Just a point about timing. Our universe is not 15 billion years old, but the way they figured it was that the speed of light never changed. Not much, right? And because the speed of light doesn't change, that if we're looking at an object that we can calculate, you know, by triangulation to be at such and such a place far away from us, that at the speed of light, that would mean it's, 200 million miles away or 50 light years or whatever. But what happened is the Big Bang hypothesis came out, and the Big Bang that created our virtual reality at the within 300 microseconds of the formation of that, the speed of light was, of all electromagnetic radiation, was faster than it is now by 10 with 60 zeros behind it faster. I can't even figure out the words for that. It was so fast.
To find out more about our guest and all others, please visit our website at mysteriousradio.com. And I want to give special thanks to our co-creator and executive producer, Kim Kyle, who brought this show to you today. And working hard behind the scenes, our team of four, I want to thank them as well. Follow us on social media and share the show with others that may like the subjects that we cover. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Mysterious Radio.